Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, of course, will be Mr. Nate Maxton, Mr. Gabriel Ricard, Mr. Dustin Holland, co-founder of Club Progress, and with me co-hosting tonight, and on the line is Ellie Fenzer. Ellie, how are you doing?
Hi.
How's it going?
I'm here.
Yeah. Cool. I'm here, too.
Hi. Yay! I can telephone.
Oh man! And of course, Ellie just recently released the spec on Clefjaw Press. Really, really great, great book. And I'm glad to have you on the program tonight. Thank you for coming by.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Right on. You guys are, if you hear that in the background, that's actually the Congos, a little song called Don't Blame It on I. Might actually be familiar with that song. If you are familiar with any sort of like Jet Li movies like Kiss of the Dragon, really great scene in that movie. Jet Li's riding in the back of a cab with this guy. Dude's got dreadlocks, of course. They may even be a member of the Congos. I'm not going to, you know, be that kind of stereotypical person, but... he looks at the back rearview mirror there, and he looks at Jet Li. He's like, "Do you like this music?" And Jet Li's like, "Yeah." So if Jet Li likes it, we like it here at Clefjaw. So we're playing that. All right. So tonight we're going to run a gamut of Clefjaw authors, as well as Cheeseburger Nebula Galactic Press authors. I love that name. You like that name? It's a pretty good one, right? Yeah? No.
I love that name.
It's a good one. I like it. And, of course, we're going to be, unfortunately, I did want to go ahead and mention at the top of the program, deepest condolences go out to Mr. William Surabani and his family. Unfortunately, William won't be here tonight. He did recently have a loss in the family, and our thoughts go out to him tonight. And sorry you can't make it on the program tonight, and just know, man, our thoughts are going out to you. So pick up to William Surabani. That being said, I feel like we should start off the show with a little bit of Miss Ellie Finzer herself, who just, like I said, recently released Says the Spec. You brought a selection along from that book, is that correct?
I do. I have my book in my hand.
Nice. How does that feel?
I haven't stopped crying over it, really.
Yeah. I like to hear.
It's big. Yeah, it's a big deal for me.
Good. Well, it's a big deal for us, and we're glad to release it. You guys can always go to www.clefjaw.com, click on the shop tab and pick that up. Of course, Ellie, like I said, she did bring along a selection tonight. What did you bring for us, starting us off?
I have a range of sort of tones in my book, and there's a couple of things I wanted to focus on because I think they really demonstrate the extreme edges of where I write from. Because like Gabriel pointed out when we did the interview, taken in one piece, the manuscript, the book itself can come across as pretty heavy, and there's a lot of frankly deep shit that I write about. A lot of like really kind of unhappy things happen to the people in these stories and poems. But I also think that there's just that edge. It's like the colors at the edge of the photo, the book cover, the painting that you and Lindsay did. There's brightness in all of it. And that's the part that makes me.
Right on. Hell yeah. I love that explanation. Woo. You should have used that as a synopsis. Goddamn. That was good. Well, all right.
Aww,
I'm so stoked. I can't wait to hear it. Shit.
Me too. Sorry, my phone's being dumb.
Oh, you're good.
Okay. Okay, should I start with a little something?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So I wanted to start with a poem, and it's called Prayer Circle Jerk. A small background, I grew up in a very religious household, in a very Baptist community, very, very Baptist, and my parents were church planters and missionaries. So we moved around a lot. And
oh, shit. All right.
Moved. We didn't really get out of the church. So I grew up in this very, very small world. And it took me a really long time to realize that the world was big. like when I was like 16, 17, 18 is when I started to realize that there was a world outside of the church. And that has really, it's followed me around my whole life.
I have no idea what you're talking about growing up in South Central Kentucky in the Bible Belt.
I've
never heard of, yeah, nope. No, I get
yeah.
you.
Yeah, so you get that.
Yeah, I get
it
you.
Weird, it's almost cultish.
Mm-hmm.
It is cultish. What am I talking about? And not the cute movie kind where you get out at the end and everyone wins.
Good one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary. So this is my take on some of that. Mother said talking to God was the way to go, that we could count on help in times of turmoil, and our devotion, it was going to be rewarded with a home in heaven. She made eternity sound pretty cool at the time. I liked the idea of pearly gates, except I kept picturing these monster cast iron doors covered in oyster shells, because isn't that how pearls happen? I guess there are supposed to be whole streets made out of jewelry. I never could figure out how anyone was going to get anywhere if we were always picking those jagged, shiny stones out of our toes. Mother just shrugged and said I was beyond hope, because I would ask the strangest questions and the pastor's face would turn red as he tried to figure out how to explain the moon really was 6,000 years old. And the dinosaurs died after the ark landed because they couldn't deal with the rain clouds that weren't there before the flood happened. My dad, he gave up on me when I started having trouble sleeping. I complained about the angels I could hear trumpeting all the way from the clouds, and I was pissed no one had invented heaven-proof earplugs. Notwithstanding a lack of foresight, everyone liked to remind me I was far from perfect, and it was going to take intercession on Jesus' behalf in order to convince the good father that even a scourge like me deserved a second chance. Stuff like that was always confusing to me, and even though it bothered me when they got so frowny about my questions, I had to know why, what, how, and then I had to check again because I thought the whole point of Jesus was that no one had to be perfect to be with God forever. Sure, I prayed because they said to, because I wanted to believe those fervent wishes were landing somewhere useful, but nothing changed after, please don't let him touch me anymore. And nothing changed after, I want to live in Iceland so I can cover up these bruises with long-sleeve sweaters all year round. And I gave up on prayer because when I take these pills and close my eyes, please God, let this be it, that didn't work either. So I decided prayers were better left to the good people, like the pastor who called me a whore when I got my ears pierced 3 times, or the guy who told my friends I had herpes because I wouldn't blow him in the locker room after school, or that really nice lady who said my baby died because of the sin I harbored in my heart. They seemed to know more than me anyway.
Heaven proof earplugs indeed, motherfuckers. Like, I feel like you just described like 6 of my Sunday school teachers, like for real.
Yeah.
All right.
That poison gets in there.
It does. It really does. Shit. We've got 17 minutes left of live streaming, and then, of course, we got an extra 15 minutes left of the after hours. So I did want to go ahead and mention right off the top of the bat, we do have a guest call-in number, which is 516-387-1501. Ellie, awesome poem. I wanted to get one person's take on that in particular, and that is a man who's been waiting for 14 minutes, and, of course, I'm betting very patiently, co-founder of Clefjaw Press, and now also co-founder of Cheeseburger Nebula Galactic Press, Mr. Dustin Holland. Dustin, how you doing, brother?
Oh, it's so good to hear you guys.
Yeah, it's good to have
you
on.
How are you?
Yay!
A lot better now that you're on here, brother. That's fucking good to hear your voice, and thank you for coming by the program tonight.
Dude, it's a pleasure. It's been too long. Very psyched. By the way, congratulations to both of you on all the work I know you both put in to set the spec. It's fucking awesome. I love it.
It is, right?
Yeah. Incredible piece of work. So you guys should all be patting yourselves on the back incessantly. I love that book.
Fucking amen. What'd you think? You like that poem there, right? I mean, that was...
Ah, it's so good. I think really? You read that at the Mercury... Or maybe, no, you read that at a reading I had the pleasure of reading with you at once, Ellie, and I was crying and shit. It's such a good, I love that poem.
Fucking
yeah, hell. That was at the Still Cellar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There is video
yeah,
of
that's
that.
Right.
There is video proof of this happening.
Yeah.
It did. It happened.
Yeah. Wow. Mr. Dustin Holland, what did you bring to the table tonight, sir?
I brought some excerpts from kind of a long, cut-up, fractured poem, if you wouldn't mind me reading some of said excerpts.
Yeah, please do, sir. I'm excited. Fuck, I haven't heard your stuff in a while, so I'm ready to go.
Well, shit. Okay. Mostly trash-clogged gutters and the moon grinning behind sex shops and tourist traps. Tripped and stumbled into a pool of spilt beer and vomit where God died on Bourbon Street. I'm sick of writing poems about all the shit I hate. I'd rather build a house for my friends and I to live in than tear down the ones we can't afford. She asked for my license at the door, but it ran down the street with its shirt off, screaming about the end of something we're all too young to pick up on, so the party had to go on without us. I used to be left-handed, I'm serious. 12 hours of hellbound triple helix interlocking eggshell neurotoxicity and a cold beer away from home won't save you from the post-luminous bicycle repairman. They use prayer candles to light cigarettes in industrial kitchens working for tips. On the floor, drinking wine out of Santa Claus mugs and cutting up old magazines on the other side of winter, the perfect nutrients for growing animals are fucking with your TV. Last night, Connor and I bought sodas and candy from a Martian tweaker who knew all about how important it is to be able to keep track of which dimension you're standing in, and everything that goes in needs to go out through the outdoor, down one-way streets and bad ideas. It's been a long fucking month, and at least once a day I end up on the corner of 3rd and Terry watching melted snow steam up off of the sidewalk like the image of an angel dreaming or at least working. Transmitting frequencies of exhausted matriarchs and bewildered hound dogs across slabs of moon rock until even the statues of children sitting on top of lizards in the park end up undaunted and unrivaled. I've never been here before, and the image of stability strikes lightning at pretty women on bicycles without a care in the world. The downward spiral is a double helix stuck between rain clouds, the shoulders shrugged as if to say, hold fast. My stomach can't always handle the truth, and some days you're only as good as your mother's worst fears for your future. I snuck into the sacred church of perpetual motion and drank all the holy water. Never forgive me, I'm over-caffeinated and unsatiable. Overripe fruit and punk rock for breakfast, an open mouth and a burning building in memory of vulgar expressions of humanity falling asleep at the theme park. A beautiful purple exhaling against the passenger seats of countless floating cars chasing each other to the sun.
Oh, my God. You wrote that during the New Orleans trip, right?
Yeah. So this is actually, like, that was from this, like, 20-page poem that's a combination of bits from the New Orleans trip and an older poem I wrote called Eat the Devil. I cut it up and rearranged it, like, and then also cut-ups from A Nurse's Guide to Neurological Disorders. And, yeah.
Oh, my God. So beautiful, man.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me read. It's nice.
Oh, thanks for fucking bringing your double helix and your luminous bicycle repairman to the show. I appreciate that.
It's a pleasure.
So awesome of you. Oh, my God. So we've got 12 minutes left, and my man here has been waiting for about 16, and I'm going to bring him on. This, of course, is one of the editorial staff here at Cleftjaw Press and author of Clouds of Hungry Dogs, really great poetry book that has made the rounds and, quite frankly, is it's a goddamn monument is what it is. Mr. Gabriel Ricard, thank you for coming on the program, sir.
Thank you for having me, and my thoughts are with William Seward Bonney tonight as well. It's very unfortunate. Yeah, it's unfortunate he couldn't do the show, but obvious reasons, and our thoughts are definitely with him tonight. So, William, if you hear this, we're with you, buddy. Hang in there.
Fucking A, brother. And thank you for coming by, brother. I appreciate you coming on. Are you in Virginia right now? Are you in New York? Are you in Costa Rica? Where are you at in the world, brother?
I'm still waiting to wake up in Costa Rica and have no idea how I got there. I'm in New York these days,
York?
Which is giving me I'm out on Long Island, and it's giving me a good chance to meet and read with some of the poets that we got around here, especially in New Jersey.
Right on, man. How did that last reading go? I know that you went to that one in Jersey, and it was like with Damian Rucci, is that right? And
I believe that's right. Damian Rucci, Charles Joseph, a fantastic writer named Chelsea Palmero. I hope I'm getting that name right. But the reading went really well, and we sold a lot of books. And then we went to a furries convention and sold even more books, if you can believe that.
Wow.
All right, man. You're always giving books to, like, really interesting
poetry.
People. Yeah, like, seriously. We're getting very inventive these days. Very inventive.
Well, it helped, and I had to follow through on my promise that anybody, and this promise stands now. So anybody listening is interested. If you purchase a copy of Clouds of Hungry Dogs, which is available at the Clefjaw Shop and at Amazon.com, I will sign the book in my own blood for $20, which is $10 more than me. I have done it. I did it in a bar in Tyson's Corner, Virginia.
Nice.
Holy shit.
Can we make that the title of, like something? Like, I did it in a bar in Tyson, Virginia. Can we just make that a title right now?
That is a good title. I'll leave it up to anybody who wants it, though. And Ellie,
that would be
right.
A great T-shirt.
That would be a great T-shirt. But then everybody would just think I stole it from Bukowski or something.
Well, you could have a picture of Bukowski, like, frowning, but the subtext of the frown could be, like, very explicit, and that subtext could be, like, I didn't actually write that quote, and that's why I'm frowning. My name is Charles Bukowski.
What I could even do, too, just to fuck with people a little more or be super hipstery, is just get a picture of Ed Asner dressed as Santa Claus and just tell everybody that's Bukowski.
Nice.
Ooh, yeah.
You have to wear the white beard with it, though. Sorry. Like,
yeah,
it goes with it.
And I do have a poem to read, if that was going to be the deal for tonight. But before I jump into that, Ellie, I just wanted to congratulate you, you know, in a public setting about your book. And I am a huge fan of it, and I'm going to be buying it pretty soon. And I hope you sell a million copies, because I think it's the best thing Clefjaw Press has ever put out.
Thank you, Gabriel. That means a lot coming from you. That's big.
If it doesn't dominate the charts, then there is no justice. I can't speak too terribly long, so if you'll allow me, Frankie, Justin, Ellie, I'll read a poem I got here.
Go for it.
All right, cool. I wrote this 2 days ago, so forgive the rocky reading. It's called Hug the Delivery Man. The happy little assholes are traveling on the bullets that rip through the poisoned winos and tourists with well-worn maps of the world, leaving little tattoos of incomprehensible gibberish on their skin. They're small, they're political, or they aren't, and we just need to imagine that something is so, so important without bringing that messy Hulkamaniac god into the women's medium thin middle. So they might be huge. They might be the singers who can't believe they're not allowed to burn garbage like the good old Heaven's Gate Park days. You could torch the park benches, the EMTs who would bravely sweat to death 4 times before the last August Street Festival asks to stay for just an hour or 6 beyond the October 19th extension. Rabbit hole number 9 could be number 8, could be the thing that we can't actually identify, but believe it might be an unwholesome half-Catholic marriage between number 6 and number 10, with a breath from number 9 thrown in for some sort of measure. All of these rabbit holes are fucked. All of them can't run on these arrogant ensembles for much longer. And then you're stuck dealing with the incest and guest spots. You're pushing neon Halloween boulevards into filthy, dirty roads from the isolated parts of Virginia. You're so confused. Your hands are crawling with the apolitical little fuckers. You can go left. You can just as soon go home. You can bake French fries on the same pan as the cake. You can hug your kid. Hug your kids. Twirl the dog on a dinner plate to the literal death of Johnny Cash. Hug the delivery man, even if he just threw up next to your sink. For the love of bedmouths and broomsticks, fucking hug somebody. And check their pockets.
Nice. Great ending. Great
Jeez.
Fucking ending. Check their pockets.
That was so.
Oh, my God. Whew. Your rabbit hole, yeah. Wow, man. I'm like all like swarmed with like double helixes and rabbit holes right now, and like Southern Baptist sentimentality, and I'm like,
whew.
I'm starting to trip, guys.
There's a lot of very silly stuff going on, to be sure.
It's a lot of stuff. It's 420. Whew. Let's add to the mania.
It's 421 here, but
yeah. Well, let's just add to the whole mania. Coming up next. Hey, did you have something, sir? Did you have one more?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
No. I do have to get going, though. So I'm going to head on down the road. And good luck to everybody for the rest of the show. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to co-hosting with you, Frankie, in a little while. It should be, what was the
next
date
week.
For the next episode? Next week.
Mm-hmm. Next week, sir.
Next week. I will be there with bells on.
All right. Well, thanks for coming by, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Have a good night. Safe travels.
Take care, man.
You too, Ellie. Take care. Bye. Thanks, Dustin.
Thank you.
Gabriel Ricard, everybody. Really great poem. Did anybody catch the title of that? I didn't catch the title. I don't even know.
Oh, me neither.
Yeah. Gabriel, we're going to get that title from you later on. but right now, we're going to bring in Mr. Nate Maxson. He's been waiting on hold for 17 minutes exactly. Boom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hi there.
Hey.
How's it going, guys?
How you doing, man?
Hey. I don't think Gabriel read the title of that poem out loud. Yeah. So.
Oh, good. It wasn't us.
It might be.
I think
we're going to make it that Tyson, Virginia poem or title. We're just going to go ahead and call that.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
I just.
Well, we're talking. We kind of had this Ellie's poem. I wasn't sure what I was going to read, but Ellie's poem about Christianity of a sort sort of inspired me to read something that I have not read before yet. This is pretty much new. And let me first say that I am a huge Star Wars fan, and this is the first thing I've ever written that might be termed Star Wars fan fiction. Although, anyway, the title of this I stole it from John Prine. It's called Obi-Wan Kenobi, The Missing Years, as in John Prine's Jesus, The Missing Years. So, you guys still there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, here we go. Almost every Saturday night, he comes in here with that filthy beard and dressed in those old rags that seem to be the only clothes he owns. He drives a rusty white hover car with a Republican flag sticker on it. And that pisses some folks off, but he doesn't give a damn. Every Saturday night, for the last decade, Obi-Wan Kenobi walks into the Mos Eisley Cantina and drinks himself into a stupor while ranting at me and anyone else who listened about how fucked up the galaxy is. Ion power's gonna ruin the planet, man. Haven't they learned anything? He drinks cheap beer, lots of it. He doesn't have a job, and nobody knows where he gets his money. But we don't ask him any questions about it. He's a veteran, he says. And once when Sheila, the Twi'lek bartender from Yavin, asked him about what he did in the war, he got this look on his face that I'll never forget. That sort of haunted, hyperventilating look, and then he started ranting about someone named Annie, and then he started crying, and I told him that if he didn't want to talk about it, that was fine, and later I told Sheila never to bring it up again, because everyone here had seen some shit, and Sheila understood. Another time, some government folks, stormtroopers with that white armor and everything, came in and started asking questions about the bar, how long I'd been the proprietor. I told them the truth, 20 years, inherited it from my uncle, who swindled it from a hut and then had to flee the planet. But then they started asking about Ben, only they didn't call him Ben. They called him Obi-Wan, and that was how I learned his full name. I lied and told them that he'd been around for a while, but left a few years ago. Never told him about this. Don't know if I want to. Sometimes he gets into fights on purpose and loses on purpose, too. I know it's deliberate, because the one time he won, he put three much younger guys in the hospital. But a few times a year, he pisses some good old boys from the mining academy off, and they go out to the parking lot and beat the tar out of him while he just lets them. I know a few years back he got into a row with the moisture farmer Owen Lars over something to do with Owen's nephew, and some very nasty accusations were flung from both parties, but again, that's none of my business. I'm just here to try and offer some of these people a sympathetic ear. I know it sounds sappy, like some sort of pseudo-cheers platonism, but, you know, I just want to offer them a place where they can find a little sanctuary for a little while, and while I'm at it, let me be perfectly clear. The idea that my bars are some kind of spice den full of criminals and prostitutes is slander, and I do not appreciate it. Anyway, Ben's one of those guys. I'd like to be friends, like genuine friends, but I only see him when he's either preparing to drink or so drunk he's incoherent most of the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And all this time, I still don't know very much about him. He's very guarded. I think he drinks like that because he wants to die. I know that if I cut him off permanently, he'd just get it somewhere else and do it in private, alone. And somehow that feels crueler to me than my being the supplier, if that makes any sense. And I know the huts still want to run me out of business, but I pay him protection money every month, and it's stupid, but there's people like Ben who need a place like mine. They need it, not just for the booze. But on the other hand, I suppose everyone likes to justify what they're doing as some kind of higher calling, even the owner of a dive bar on the Outer Rim. About once a year, Ben stays till closing. Maybe it's the anniversary or something. The death of whoever Annie was is what I suspect, but I don't know. And I remember one time after closing, I walked out with him into the desert because I didn't want him driving home in that condition. And, well, he somehow convinced me to give him back the keys I'd gotten from him. Not sure how he did that, but it was the damnedest thing. And I told him, "What the hell's wrong with you? You can't go home like this." And he said, "I'll be all right." And I said, "You keep doing this to yourself, you are going to die," which he seemed to think was kind of funny. He got into his hover car and said, "Not today, my friend. Not today." And I think it was the saddest six words that anyone on Tatooine had ever said.
Oh, my God. Oh.
That was so
damn
awesome.
That was so dope. Obi-Wan,
I'm
the drunken
I'm so geeking out right now.
Oh, my God.
That was so okay in that universe. Oh, my goodness. That needs to be a film, like a little short film.
That's a new Star Wars spinoff. Disney's not going
to
be happy about the script, though, I don't think. But we can work with him.
But when Andrew feels better, we could get him to play Obi-Wan because he kind of looks like him.
Oh, I'm down.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah. Dr. Bonnie. Sorry.
Oh.
I used his birth name.
He does look like Obi-Wan. He does, yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of an Obi-Wan vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he's got the like laid backness on the surface, but underneath there's like a simmering volcano happening. I can totally see that.
Oh, simmering volcano. I'm gonna start calling him El Poco after that volcano that erupted on
him. Yes.
Yeah.
That's probably better than St. Helen.
Andrew, you are now El Poco, sir.
El Poco is kind of a silly name for a volcano.
I dug it.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. The actual name is like it's like a Mayan name that no one can pronounce, like anybody. I don't know. I have so much trouble with those names. They're crazy.
Yeah, they're tricky.
They are. Really are.
That
in
German.
Don't even get me started. I've got the dictionary for Deutsch over here, so I will break it out. I'll break out
Deutsch.
From there, Mike.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. Some dares and some dosses and some uns and some
I.
All that good stuff. I know a lot of the
I only
articles.
Know fake cartoon German from Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wagner, that's where I learned about Wagner was Bugs Bunny, so I can't even.
I can count to 10 and say I love you. In German.
I think I can say shithead in German, but that's about it.
Ellie, that sounds like the beginning of what could be a very interesting poem. I can count to 10 and say I love you in German.
That's a pretty good, good opener.
I like that.
Yeah.
That'd be also a great like cover letter for a job application. Like,
seriously.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to add that to my resume under special skills.
Yeah, you can probably just get rid of the rest of your special skills and like job history. Be
like,
holy
the rest
shit!
Of the history, yeah.
You're pretty much hired.
Here's
like
my resume.
Any employer who's watched Die Hard should know how helpful it would be to just have somebody who can say nice things in German, right? Because if somebody had been like, "Yo, German Alan Rickman, I love you," in his, you know, his native language. You know,
right.
He probably wouldn't have needed to shoot the glass so that Bruce Willis's feet hurt.
Right.
You know, this,
he probably
this
just needed a hug and somebody to say, "Ich liebe dich."
Oh, man. That's so aggressive. So aggressive.
It's like the nicest thing in the world, and you sound like you're so mad.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I love
so,
German.
So, we do have one more caller on the line. Person's been hanging out for like 14 minutes. We are in the after hours spot, and I think we got about 10 minutes left. So I'm going to go ahead and bring him on, or her, or them. Could be them. 602, you're live.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hey.
I know that voice.
Yep. This is Tyler. I just wanted to call in and let my wife know how very proud of her that I am. And
oh,
I'm her biggest
my God.
Fan, and I love her.
Oh, this is Tyler!
How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm good, man. I'm glad to hear from you. I haven't heard your voice in so long, and I was starting to, like, really miss it. And you know, it's good to hear it, man. Welcome
yeah,
to the program.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't have any poetry to read because that's not my skill set. That's Ellie's skill set.
No, your skill set, and I will go on record in saying this, is Mr. Tyler Finzer here is responsible for the website. He's responsible for, like, helping us out on the back end. And that basically said that means he helps out with everything technical. And I don't think we could operate without you, sir. And I appreciate everything that you do for us. I really do. Big thumbs
yeah,
up. You can't see it right now, but I'm giving it to you. So...
No problem.
That.
Happy to do it.
Hell yeah. Well, I appreciate all you guys coming by the show tonight. I did want to mention before the end of the program that next week, April 27th, we are going to have Mr. Austin Price, which was KJ9's staff pick. We're going to have him on the program. He was supposed to be at the show in Santa Fe, but unfortunately got snowed out. And I think that's actually the first time that we had a backup reader that couldn't show up as well. And it was the first for
wow.
us. I was like kind of bummed, but then he set a new record, so I'm like pretty stoked about that. I like setting new records.
We missed out on him. We missed out on you, Ellie. That was too bad.
Yeah.
None of you guys could make it.
Yeah, it was good reading, and you guys, we definitely missed you guys there. So we're gonna have to set something up here in the future where we get everybody together and have like a feast or something. I don't even give a shit about.
Can I suggest for both a feast and a reading, maybe late August in Colorado?
Yeah, I'm totally down for that.
I could probably do that.
Yeah. The Finzers,
cool.
You guys down for that, or you guys are a maybe list right now, or I know
very maybe.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, because the baby's coming in the middle of July, and I'm still going to be a swollen, miserable mess in August.
Fair enough. Well, congratulations on the other baby.
Yeah.
Right? That's fun.
Yeah.
I like babies.
This one's named
I'm
Leo,
good with
right?
Him.
This guy's named
this
Leo.
Is Leo.
Is this Leo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This
I like
is
that
the
one.
Leonardo. He's named after Da Vinci.
All right. Nice. He's
hell
not
yeah.
Gonna sleep 3 hours a day like Da Vinci, though, right? Like, or at least you're hoping.
Well, I really hope not, because I need way more than that.
Right.
We'll find out.
You guys will. You definitely will. Also, I did want to go ahead and mention that Mr. Dustin Holland also has a new book out, and congratulations, Dustin, on your new book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's actually we're going to put it out. Things have moved around a little bit, so we're looking at September for a release date. But, yeah, thank you. I'm excited about it.
Wicked awesome.
I am very stoked on that. If you guys have read Captain Head, if you've read Duck Walking, man, get yourself some, get more rad. Get Dustin Holland's book, Get More Rad.
Hey, thank
you.
You
need to do. Yeah.
Speaking of books, when can I expect The Professional Donor to be something I can
yes,
in
I want
my slimy hands?
I am doing like the 60th edit on page 91 at the moment, so I'm gearing it up, and I'm thinking sometime late August, maybe September. That's what I'm thinking.
Awesome.
So
I'm excited. 33
more edits on that page to go?
I've got about 80 more pages after this, and then I'll probably do a whole another edit after that. I literally am so frightened of releasing this book. I'm very frightened of it, so...
Everything I know about that book makes it sound like it's going to be amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear God, don't tell me that, please.
Dude, it's going to be killer. I was rereading some of APC the other day, and then I was reading it, and I was like, holy shit, Frankie's novel, like, Frankie's poetry is rad as hell. And like when he takes this language and this rhythm into prose, it's gonna fuck my skull in like a positive way. And so I'm excited.
A couple months back, I asked Frankie what his book was about, and he goes off into this rant about puppy blood and mental hospitals, and I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. Oh, God, you guys have put so much pressure on me now. No, I appreciate it. I don't know. It's been a tough experience for me writing it. Shit, I don't know. I got 5 minutes left. You guys want to hear some of it real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Screw it. So, like I said, I'm still working on the edits on this. And I'm just going to go to, okay, all right. So this is I've used the Greek alphabet for this, and this is just a little subsection. This is from page 91. Eventually, the clothesline gave way like their mother had promised. Cleto was around 4'7" when his brother weighed 185 pounds, and it knocked the wind out of Stephen, but didn't curb the constant bragging that ensued for weeks, if not months, after the wires had snapped. The fall itself was a result of a record-breaking hang which lasted 5 minutes, 6 feet off the ground. Stephen proved his point well enough that even though he weighed more than his older brother, he could still hang in there the longest. From that moment on, the competition escalated between the new brothers. Stretching gave way to constant provocation, only halting behind the white noise ringing in their ears watching the sun fall away at dusk. Stephen and Cleto were prone to the same high-pitched silence, listening for coyotes in the brush below the acreage. Both boys languid, short-tempered spirits and bare feet, thirsty and poised on the limbs of a mimosa tree. Stephen was obsessed with collecting the cicada and locust skins on the branches he could reach. Sure, he was taller, but he still was unable to climb as high or see as far. Cleto justified his impulse to shame his little brother with Bo's one good eye, Stephen's subterfuge, his fat fucking cheeks, and the obviously different reception they'd get at family, school, church gatherings. Stephen was clearly nervous about talking about his brother around his friends. Cleto's impulse control revolved around his exposure to confusing and socially embarrassing situations, and when Stephen would say something to the effect of, "Well, we're both adopted, but I think his mom is black or something. My parents kind of keep it all a secret." And Cleto was in earshot. He responded with an observation of his own. And I'll just go ahead and stop there for now.
Dude.
So.
Yeah.
It's been the most honest I've ever been with myself, in writing. So that's a lot of the fear that comes from sharing this. So
yeah,
it's really hard. And of course, nobody. I'll just be real. Books are something that are dying right now. So it's it's a matter of I don't mind putting out books for other people. I really enjoy doing that for other people. And, when I hear things like, Ellie, what you told me at the top of the program, that means the world to me, and I really appreciate that. But whenever I put out something of my own, and I just don't want to waste the effort. You know what I mean? And I don't know if I'm, I don't know what the reception's going to be like, and I don't know how my reception to the reception is going to be like. So I'm kind of freaked out at the moment, so. Still working through it, basically.
Well, for what it's worth, I can't wait to read it. And so far, the other times that you've shared yourself in terms of publishing books, it's yielded an amazing product. And what's a dude got to do to get his hands on a review copy of it?
Yeah, my friend wants to know, but which would be me.
Yeah.
I might
shared it with maybe three people in the world, for real. Yeah. But yeah, I'll talk to you guys about that. We'll
groovy.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, gentlemen, lady, everyone here, I appreciate you guys for calling in. Thank you for all of our listeners out there. I really appreciate it. Probably got a minute left, so I'm going to go ahead and close this out. Thanks to Dustin Holland, Nate Maxson, Gabriel Ricard. Tyler Finzer, Ellie Finzer, William Cerebani here in spirit, and, of course, everybody else out there that tuned in. This is Diggable Planets. Name of the song is Nickel Bag of Funk. Catch you guys next week.
Good night, everyone.
Adios.
Peace.
Auf Wiedersehen.